This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Is Michigan's 6th congressional district ripe for change? Apparently many Democrats think so. 5 have officially announced that they are running for the seat, which is currently held by Republican Fred Upton. At least one other potential candidate is seriously considering a campaign. It's not clear yet if Upton will be the Republican candidate in the House district because he is considering running for United States Senate. We're going to take a look at the 6th Congressional District with Western Michigan University political science professor John Clark. Thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure.
So there was a time not so long ago when it seemed as though the Democrats had to go out and find somebody to run against Fred Upton, and now there are people lining up for the opportunity. Is there a reason that stands out to you why it would be now that more Democrats want to get into this race?
Well, I think there are a couple of things, one that's somewhat Democratic specific and one that speaks a little more generally to some things that are going on in American politics. With regards to the Democrats in particular, this is not a phenomenon that is unique to our district. In lots of districts across the country, we've seen a number of relatively new to politics folks jumping into campaigns for a whole variety of reasons, but in large measure in response to the Trump presidency. And so the fact that there is a Republican in the White House and there are Democrats and potential Democratic candidates across the country who are angry about that. And connected with that, there were a number of potential Democratic candidates that were energized either by Bernie Sanders' campaign or just generally in the previous election cycle. And so you've got people that are sort of ginned up for a fight. And if they're not very well connected with Democratic Party politics and with prior elective office, then there's no reason for any of them to wait for somebody else. They all jump in together. To a large extent, I think that's what we're seeing here in the 6th District and, again, in other places around the country. More generally, I think the Trump phenomenon suggests that, hey, you don't really have to know a lot about politics. You don't really have to have the kind of resume that we used to think of as being important, and you still can win. That's not to say that most of those candidates without much experience or resume are likely to win. In fact, they're not, generally speaking, likely to win. But it can be done, and Donald Trump is proof of that, that you can run against the establishment of even your own party and still have a chance of winning.
So if we try to look ahead here, and that is always dangerous to do when we're talking about politics, because we're about a year out from the August primary, when these 5, maybe 6 Democrats could all be competing against each other. Might that idea of being the outsider and not having experience be something that plays well? Or if President Trump's approval numbers don't improve or maybe even slide from where they are now, could the argument turn a bit, and could the new thinking be, well, wait a minute, maybe some experience in government is not such a bad thing to take to Washington?
Yeah, so, you know, certainly there is a lot of time for things to unfold. But a couple things that we always need to keep in mind. One is that elections are about specific candidates. When you and I talk about the presidential race and the presidential nominations, we talk about a path because there's a dynamic element. There's a series of contests, and so candidates try to map out a path to the nomination. The dynamic element is somewhat less when you've got, you know, a one-shot primary with this large number of candidates. But that idea of a path is still important. Where are you going to get your votes? And with whom will you be competing for that particular voting block? And so I think the challenge in a large field is trying to figure out what that path is. Now, the upside, I suppose, is you don't need that many votes if the votes are divided very broadly. And so it could very well be the case that with only, you know, 20%, 25% of the primary vote in a very crowded field, you can capture the nomination. Now, that doesn't suggest you've got a huge base then to move into the general election. But the general election dynamic is a different dynamic because then it's one candidate from the Republican Party against one candidate from the Democratic Party, maybe with some other candidates thrown in as independent candidates or minor party candidates. But it's really that head-to-head contest. And so it's a different way of then thinking about what's your path. How do you maximize your vote potential in order to beat that different set of candidates in that different election context. And so, you know, we've seen some polling recently that looks at the generic ballot. You know, what if there were a Democrat running against a Republican, how would you vote? That's kind of informative. But when it gets to a national election, there is going to be a specific Democrat and a specific Republican, and that changes things pretty dramatically.
Democrats have looked at the 6th congressional district and have seen, I guess, a couple trends that have made them think that it is more winnable now than, say, it was 15 years ago. But still, you know, you're talking about if Fred Upton runs for re-election, a 30-year incumbent. That's never easy to win. And again, we have the long history of a Republican winning, even if he runs for Senate and it's a different Republican candidate. So if you're a Democratic Party leader and you're looking at this race as one that you know is not easy, are you concerned that there is going to, at this point, be a primary that doesn't look like any of these candidates plan to back out, and that it could get expensive, and that the ultimate winner of that primary doesn't have the resources that they had at the beginning to then turn around and try to win a general election race?
I think that's definitely a concern. I mean, one of the things that the Democrats have done reasonably well in the 6th district is to coalesce around a single candidate well before the nomination. Now, in some ways, that was because there just wasn't interest. There wasn't competition, and some of those candidates had to be recruited rather than sort of jumping in themselves. But it allowed the general election dynamics of a Democratic challenger running against Fred Upton to emerge much earlier. And in the case of Paul Clements, he was able to put together a campaign organization and to raise some money nationally because of the fact that it was clear that he was going to be the Democratic nominee running against Upton. With a crowded field and a relatively late primary compared to at least some other states, that changing from nomination mode to general election mode happens pretty quickly in Michigan, and particularly when we're talking about raising money from outside the state and establishing yourself and your connections with Democratic-leaning organizations that might provide money, individual donors that might provide money. There's simply not a lot of time to do that unless you sort of dominate the field and, you know, establish yourself at the time of the primary as the clear consensus Democratic challenger that everybody's behind. Looking at this field, it's not clear to me that there's anybody that has that level of name recognition, that level of support early on. Certainly things can change. But at this point, there's not one person that sort of stands out as being kind of head and shoulders above everybody else in terms of their experience or their candidate quality, if we can use that in sort of a generic sense. And as a result, I think it makes it very difficult to see how a crowded field at this point helps any Democrat win the 6th congressional district.
Since you mentioned Paul Clements, let me note that he is one of the five Democrats who has announced they are running again. Should also note, interest of full disclosure, he is a colleague of yours.
That's right. He teaches in the political science department and is a great colleague.
Let me, though, ask you about the flip side of that, because I was talking to a Democrat not so long ago who said there could be an advantage to a primary, that it gets the candidates out there earlier, you know, because you have to actually compete to get votes for August. You kind of build up some resources. Maybe you get to fundraise a little earlier. Maybe voters who wouldn't want to hear in May and June about your candidacy in May and June of next year might be willing to listen if they know that there's going to be a vote to cast in 2 or 3 months as opposed to November, and that there might be some resources that ultimately the campaigns, assuming everybody coalesces around the winner, are willing to share when the primary is over and you shift to general election mode. Is there something to that?
Certainly that's a possibility. And, you know, there are historical examples of where that works. But it assumes that all of the folks who are supporting Democrats can coalesce, that it's not a bitter fight, that things don't turn ugly, and that at the end of the day, whatever the outcome, there are resources then that can be shared. I suspect that it's the case that this is going to be a relatively high, this 2018, it's going to be a relatively high turnout election simply because there's going to be a lot of candidates for a lot of offices. and a lot of campaigns that are trying to get out the vote. That's something that we often don't see, at least in this part of the state. We often haven't seen. And so, you know, we could see higher turnout that sometimes then translates into higher turnout in the general election. So it's a possibility. But things could also go the other way. And it just is you know, we're going to have to wait and see how the dynamics play out once we get into a little bit more serious campaign mode.
Again, looking at this through the prism of a Democratic Party official or leader who's got to think about more than just the 6th Congressional District, but races down the ballot. I was talking to someone the other day who follows politics closely in Michigan, and they were remarking that, you know, there's five candidates who have announced they're running for Congress here, another one seriously considering it. And yet no one has really been mentioned yet as a serious candidate for a state Senate seat, which the Democrats barely lost in 2014. And Margaret O'Brien, the Republican there, is going to be up for reelection. You know, if people are getting interested as a Democratic Party official, or maybe on the other side, even a Republican Party official, do you want to try to steer people to maybe getting into politics at a somewhat lower level than Congress or United States Senate?
Absolutely. And so if, you know, if you're a party leader, you want to have good candidates contesting all of those offices. And so of these, this large number of candidates, if as a party leader, I got to say, you're going to run for this seat, you're going to run for that seat, you're going to run for this other seat, you're not going to run against each other, then absolutely that, you know, makes my job easier. That strengthens the party for the campaign. And frankly, there was a time when that's how party politics worked. Not so much anymore.
Right.
And so, you know, you might be able to persuade individual candidates that they would have a better chance running for some other office. The party does have some resources that it could devote in terms of, you know, a little bit of money, some campaign support, so on and so forth. But parties don't have a lot to offer in that regard anymore, given the way that that politics has changed. And so it becomes more difficult as a party leader. You certainly can't assign people. And it becomes fairly difficult to persuade people that maybe there's a better spot. The other thing is that as politics have changed, as voters, we tend to pay less attention oftentimes to the kinds of political experience that candidates have. And of course, Donald Trump is the best example of that. Even previous candidates that during the campaign people talked about as being unprepared, unqualified for the office, sitting Senator Barack Obama, United States Senator Barack Obama, not qualified for the presidency because he's only been senator for a very short time, even though he was in state politics not only before that. Ronald Reagan, well, he's just an actor who served a couple of years as the governor of California. And, you know, Trump's really the first example of somebody who comes to politics with no experience.
Well, to the presidency.
To the presidency.
The governor of Michigan right now, Rick Snyder, never held elected office before that,
exactly.
or ran for it, for that
and
matter.
And so, you know, we're seeing a change. And as a result, as a potential candidate, there's less incentive to run for a lower office first as a stepping stone to a higher office. There's nothing to prevent you from jumping in at whatever level you think that you can win, because we've got some examples of people who've done that successfully, who haven't needed that political experience before they ran for those higher offices.
So once the dust settles, of course, on the August primary, then attention will turn to the general election in November. I'm wondering if by this point in 2018, we may be talking about the 6th Congressional District as something that may serve as a referendum on where the Trump presidency is by that point. President Trump won the Congressional District pretty narrowly. Again, we don't know if Fred Upton's going to run for reelection to the House, but he was not an enthusiastic supporter of Donald Trump as a candidate. And, you know, now he's in the House, and who knows what the House may have done with the president's legislative agenda and investigations by then. Could people be looking at this district and seeing if it is a district where the Trump effect is going to be positive, negative, or perhaps indifferent?
You know, the Trump presidency is so unique in so many ways. We usually think of particularly the first election, but all midterm elections, as being referenda on the presidents and their administrations. But Donald Trump is not closely tied to the Republican Party. And so the extent to which Republican candidates would be punished because they're on the ballot and the Republican president is not quite as clear as would be the case in some other elections when, you know, the Republican president or the Democratic president are clearly tied to their party. And the legislative successes that they have had in those first 2 years are clearly partisan kinds of electoral successes, as we saw with Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, with Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush, George W. Bush, a little bit differently because of the influence of 9/11 and the response to that.
But 06 was a big referendum on the second term.
But 06 very much so, and Democrats did extremely well, not just here in Michigan, but nationally. And so when you've got those strong party ties, it's somewhat easier for voters to look at whatever it is that's on their ballot and view that through a partisan lens with the president as the leader of the party. If the president isn't perceived as the leader of the party, that makes it a little bit of a different dynamic lower down. We've usually seen these as, you know, sort of partisan referenda. This time around, it will be interesting to see, from the perspective of political science, of course, whether or not the old patterns hold or whether something new develops. One of the mistakes that political scientists made in the 2016 presidential election is we looked at the election, many of us, and said, oh, this is completely different than anything we've ever seen before, when in fact it turned out to be very much like everything we've seen before, and we didn't pay attention to the things that we knew.
So let's talk a little bit about the idea of Fred Upton as a candidate for United States Senate. If he were to get into this race, and we should say that he has taken his time here on deciding whether or not to launch this campaign and said that he wasn't going to rush the decision. But if he does get in, what are the obstacles he faces as a congressman who has represented one corner of the state now for 30 years?
Yeah, so there are a number of challenges there. It's worth noting that his name is one that regularly gets mentioned as a possible statewide candidate, whether for the Senate or for some other statewide office. And I think that that reflects the fact that he's viewed fairly positively by opinion leaders, whether it's folks in the media or you know, folks in Republican Party politics, as somebody who can build a coalition and can be successful. Whether or not he's ever been interested, I don't know. And whether or not he'll be interested this time around is difficult to say as well. There are a couple of very clear challenges that all candidates face, but certainly Representative Upton would. He's known in this part of the state, and that gives him a huge advantage should he run for re-election to the House of Representatives. But his statewide name recognition, not so much. It would certainly become a challenge for him in some other parts of the state and even some other Republican parts of the state to demonstrate to potential voters, either in the primary or in the general election, that he's a candidate that they should support. We've just talked about the Democrats in the 6th district in a crowded primary. It looks as though it's going to be a crowded primary for the Republicans when it comes to the United States Senate as well. And so that could create some difficulties. Does he have a clear path when he comes from a district that's fairly competitive, reasonably competitive, but in terms of media coverage is pretty isolated? And so once you get out of the Grand Rapids, Kalamazoo, Battle Creek media market, do folks over on the east side of the state even know very much about him? Do folks in the northern part of the state even know very much about him? And so that would be establishing that name recognition would be an obstacle for him, as it will be for all of these candidates who are in the race or thinking about it, with one unique
notable exception.
We can come back and talk about
right.
Kid Rock in a minute, perhaps.
Yeah.
But certainly for somebody like Fred Upton, both in the primary and then in the general election as well, that name recognition is going to be a big challenge. And we have seen other candidates for statewide office who try to move from the United States House of Representatives to some other seat, whether it's a Senate seat or the governorship or whatever else. And it becomes pretty clear that it's a difficult challenge for them to establish that name recognition in other parts of the state. And then the other thing that comes into play certainly is that we've got an incumbent United States senator who is both fairly popular at least based on her track record so far, who's already raised a considerable amount of money, not a huge amount by Senate standards, but a considerable amount of money.
Would be seeking her fourth term, so she's been there a while.
And she's been, you know, she's established herself as someone that folks in Michigan can sort of look to as being a senator. She's done that by most measures reasonably well in terms of both politics and policy. And so whoever gets the Republican nomination is going to have to run against a fairly formidable incumbent, just like should Fred Upton choose to run for re-election, whoever wins the Democratic nomination would have to challenge a formidable incumbent in the 6th congressional district. It's always more difficult for challengers to beat incumbents. We sometimes focus on those relatively rare occasions when there are incumbents that lose, but it simply doesn't happen very often, both in the Senate and in the House.
The other candidates who have announced so far are retired Michigan Supreme Court Justice Robert Young Jr., Lena Epstein, who helped run the Donald Trump campaign in Michigan in 2016, John James, who is an Iraq war veteran and a Detroit businessman, has formed an exploratory committee. None of those three people have huge name recognition statewide. I suppose Justice Young would have the most. But then, of course, there is the aforementioned Robert Ritchie, also known as Kid Rock, who has said that he is considering getting into the race. Now, I remember talking to a candidate years ago who said, look, name recognition is the easiest thing to overcome, especially if you get into the race early and you know, you get out in the state and you meet people. You know, if you've got a good track record, you can get known. But if Kid Rock is in the race, does it make it tougher for someone like Fred Upton, maybe for Justice Young, Lena Epstein, or John James, to get heard, or does that just suck all the air out of the room and everyone is focusing on everything Kid Rock does every day, everything he puts on Twitter, Instagram, etc.?
Well, as we saw in the presidential race, having celebrity is not any longer viewed as a negative when it comes to electoral politics by many people, certainly. And so, you know, to the extent to which there is oxygen in a Senate primary, having somebody with celebrity can very quickly suck that oxygen out. But then it becomes something for the voters to decide. Do you want somebody with relatively no political experience, or do you want somebody who has more political experience? I think it becomes more difficult for some of these lesser-known candidates without experience to have a shot at winning the nomination than it would for somebody who served in the United States Congress and the House of Representatives, or who served in the Michigan Supreme Court. I mean, I think that's a different path. You're appealing to a different type of voter. Whether or not, you know, Kid Rock is serious at this point, or whether he's trying to promote Kid Rock, it's hard to say, right? There were a lot of us who, when Donald Trump came down the escalator in Trump Tower, said, have you seen the ratings for Celebrity Apprentice? They're right. Terrible.
He's trying to drive
the ratings. And that's certainly what he had done in his previous discussions of running for president. He was pushing some other separate agenda. And we've seen that a lot in American politics. That's not new. Whether or not somebody with celebrity status could turn the tide in Michigan, you know, I think it's quite likely. I mean, whether or not you can be successful that way is a different question, both in the primary and in the general election. But the fact that people know who you are, you don't have to establish that name recognition. The fact that in a different media age than we have been in previously, it's possible for a candidate with celebrity to dominate the media broadly in a different way than what we would have expected in the past with a media that was less celebrity focused from the get-go and that was more centralized in terms of, you know, radio, newspaper, television, as opposed to the broad expanse of social media that we have today. It would be quite a different dynamic. It would draw a lot of attention nationally, and it may or may not matter a hill of beans when it comes to what voters in Michigan decide to do.
So if we look at these two people. It's interesting that we're going to compare Fred Upton to Kid Rock this much, but I don't think that's happened a whole lot. But is it fair to say that these two gentlemen are on some different timetables in terms of having to make a decision? I mean, Congressman Upton has said that he's in no rush and he's got no timetable for deciding whether or not to run for U.S. Senate. But if he's going to kind of run a conventional campaign, he might be on one timetable, as opposed to Kid Rock, who, of course, has all sorts of money at his disposal to self-fund a campaign, no problem getting airtime. You know, I guess I'm wondering here if Fred Upton is going to have to make his decision sooner, if it's going to be serious, as opposed to Kid Rock.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I suspect with somebody like Fred Upton, who, if he gets in the race, is going to be a serious candidate. It's not something he's giving up a seat that he's held for a long time, a fairly comfortable. And so if he chooses to run for the Senate, it's because he thinks he can win and because he's, you know, going to be serious about it. He's not going to make that decision lightly. It's not going to be a sort of a flip decision. And if that's the case, then whether or not he formally declares, he'll have to be maneuvering in a way that makes him serious when it comes to the Republican primary and then subsequently the general election. It means he's going to be having the kind of fundraising that we typically see for United States Senate races as opposed to what we see for races for the House of Representatives.
And a Senate race is much more expensive than a House
race. Way more expensive. And, you know, certainly he's well positioned to raise money. And, you know, that comes from being a long-term member of the House of Representatives. But he's going to have to do that. And that takes time and it takes effort and you've got to be serious about it. He also has to, as we've talked about with his name recognition, he's got to expand that to other parts of the state. And so he's got to find ways to become visible to Republican Party leaders first, but Republican primary voters second across the state. Again, that's doable, but it takes time and it takes effort and it takes you out of the 6th District and it takes you out of Washington, D.C. and doing the business of the House of Representatives. So it's certainly doable, but it would be something that, as a candidate, he would need to be working on sooner rather than later. The actual decision of, you know, whether or not to jump in or not can wait. But some of these other things, it seems to me, he would need to get started on relatively soon if he intended to be a serious candidate. And I can't imagine him making that decision without intending to be a serious candidate, either for his current House seat or for the Senate, should he choose to follow that route.
Okay, one last question here. I have not seen any of the polling leak on the 6th Congressional District, which I think at this point in the last two election cycles, there was some sort of polling which came out, which indicated that Fred Upton might be vulnerable. Of course, he won both of the last two elections as he won the ones before that. And then but we do have some polling on the U.S. Senate race that shows that Kid Rock, actually one poll, would be leading Debbie Stabenow. And
sure,
then in another one, he's well within striking distance. In August of 2017, how seriously should we take any polling for Congress, United States Senate, governor, et cetera?
Not very seriously at all. And, you know, with a lot of these kinds of polls, we shouldn't ever take them too seriously, right? We shouldn't put too much into them, because at this point, it's a lot about name recognition. And it's a little about partisanship. It's a lot about partisanship, but in terms of, you know, sort of specific candidate versus specific candidate, you know, these things at this point really don't matter very much. That's why we have campaigns. That's why we have candidates put together their positions on issues, get out and meet voters, try and explain why they ought to be the one who's elected. And we're seeing candidates do that at this point. But most voters are not paying any attention to either of these races, frankly, at this point. And so until we get a lot further in, the polling that we see is going to be more a reflection of name recognition at this point than really much of anything else. And there are an awful lot of voters who might say they're going to vote for this person or they're going to vote for that person who may not even remember that tomorrow. And so if you ask them again, they might come up with something completely different. And even if they did remember tomorrow, they're certainly persuadable at this point. And so, you know, we can't put very much stock in that at all. Having said that, I do think that the 6th congressional district is potentially more competitive than it has been for Fred Upton in recent election cycles. If we look at the way the district has gone for other offices, it's been fairly competitive, as has been the entire state fairly competitive. And so when it comes to, you know, sort of candidate versus candidate, Fred Upton has a strong base in the 6th congressional district. It makes it formidable for any challenger. But if Fred Upton is not on the ballot, if he chooses to run for some other office, or at some point if he chooses to retire, then all of a sudden you've got an open seat. And then the dynamics are different, and, you know, who knows what might happen under those circumstances. It's a reasonably safe Republican district, certainly when Upton's at the top of the ticket. Without him, it would still be a reasonably safe Republican district. But the right Democrat running against the right Republican could make the 6th district awfully competitive.
John, as always, thank you for your time.
Always a good time.
John Clark is a political science professor at Western Michigan University. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.